Exterminate!
Whoa. That was close. Those Daleks almost had us.
Are you mad? I had it all under control the whole time, except for... Hello?
Oh, hey.
Who in blazes are you, and what are you doing on my ship?
Ship? Oh, you mean the TARDIS. Didn't you get the message?
No, I don't believe so. What message?
I'm Craig, your new, companion.
What?
Well, not that kind of companion.
I know! Who sent you?
Well, you know, the companion agency.
The companion agency? What in bloody hell is that?
It's like a temp agency. You know, when you need a new companion. I mean, I'm not the first. Just ask Martha.
What?
Well,
Martha?
What did you think? Do you believe that you just keep running into all these people willing to travel around with you by happenstance?
What?
See you later.
Well, this certainly puts a twist on things.
So, Doc, where do we go first? Let's see, the first beer being made, that'd be cool.
Rubbish.
Oh, I know. How about let's go watch the printing presses print the first Superman comic. Wait a minute, let's go get a walk-on part on the original Star Trek show. That was some of the best sci-fi ever on TV.
Star Trek? Bloke wouldn't know it came out.
Man, oh man, that'd be super cool. So, what point in time is it?
Time to get a new companion.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, I'm looking for Doctor Who... Wasn't I here before?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is the show for Wednesday, September 12, 2007. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm fantastic. All over again. Did we just do this?
It's the whole time-space continuum thing. Work with me here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm doing great again.
We're not really sure. We take 2 weeks off and need to be retrained.
Yeah.
Or take 1 week off. No, there was all kinds of things going on in the background. We'll get into that in just a sec. Coming up in this week's show, we've got how to build a supercomputer on a budget. We've got how to build your own underwater remote-operated vehicle for even less than that.
Yes.
We take a look back at one of the great electronic games of the 70s, and towards the end of the show, stick with us, we've got the Naked Archaeologist winners. On this day in tech history for September 12, 2007. This is September 12th, it's the 255th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. That's FF Hex for you geeks out there. There are just 110 days remaining in 2007, and I'm not telling you what 110 is in Hex. It was on this date in 1609 that Henry Hudson discovers the Hudson River. The Newport Transporter Bridge is opened in Newport, South Wales on this date in 1906. And on September 12th, 1933, Leo Szilard, waiting for a red light on Southampton Road in Bloomsbury, conceives the idea of a nuclear chain reaction. Cave paintings are discovered in Lescaut, France, on this date in 1940. And it was September 12th, 1959, that Bonanza premieres, the first regularly scheduled TV program presented in color. The Soviet Union launches a large rocket, Lunik 2, at the moon on this date in 1959. And it was September 12, 1992 that NASA launches Space Shuttle Endeavour on STS-47, which marked the 50th shuttle mission. You do the math. On board is Mae Carroll Jemison, the first African-American woman in space. Frank Eugene Corder crashes a Cessna 150 into the White House's South Lawn on this date in 1994, striking the West Wing and killing himself. A blackout in Los Angeles affects millions of Californians on this date just 2 years ago. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Henry Hudson. Imagine that. He discovered the Hudson River on his birthday. Also born on this date in 1725 is Guillaume Legentil, the French astronomer. American weapons inventor Richard Gatling. Yes, he invented the Gatling boomerang. I'm sorry, the Gatling gun. Was born on this date in 1818. French physicist and recipient of the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, Irene Joliette Curie, was born on this date in 1897. And believe it or not, Linda Gray, the actress who played Colonel Deering on Buck Rogers, turned 67 today. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for September 12, 2007.
I'm Dr. Robert Ballard, and I'm an explorer in residence for the National Geographic Society and deeply enjoy this program.
Was there a pun in there? He deeply enjoys this program?
Well, he said that, but he's probably looking at, like, Notepad or some, or YouTube.
Time to read another thing. Speaking of reading, we had a favor in that intro.
Yeah, speaking of props, I want to, in our intro that you heard at the beginning of the show, Martha in our Doctor Who intro, excuse me, I'm getting all choked up. Martha in our Doctor Who intro, Dr. Hugh. His daughter, Hugh. Martha in our Doctor Who intro, let's try that for a third time, was played by Maya Whitaker. I'm hoping I say her name right. From the Nitwich Sci-Fi Fantasy Zone, and I will have a link to that in the show notes. So I want a big thanks to her. Her audio is awesome, and she was talking in the audio clip that she sent, and then she starts speaking with the British accent. I was like, whoa. She did a great job.
Awesome. Yes, thank you very much, Maya.
Awesome.
Well, we were out. Yeah. We haven't needed to be retrained. We haven't been just sitting idly slackly around.
I have. Speak for yourself.
But spending all kinds of time with the family, which is real nice. We went camping one weekend and then went to Grandma's the other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And spent the time and finished the Harry Potter book. If you haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, well, actually, if you haven't read any of the Harry Potters, they're a good, you know, just kind of get away from it all thing. J.K. Rowling does a great way of kind of inventing this universe, and a lot of things get tied up in the book. There's actually, if you listen to Slice of Sci-Fi, Michael R. Menengay, who hasn't read the books, interestingly enough, thinks there's a whole side story that could be taken on the goblins. And I got to agree with him after this reading this last one. They open up a whole new avenue that you could take like a fan fiction book.
Yeah, I remember
story.
Him mentioning that on the show. Huh.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is he made that comment without reading the book. So it was even more interesting. I do have my new project is a new website that's in beta. I will allude to it more when we get it into final production.
Oh, come on, tell us.
What do they call it? Release candidate one. No, I'm not going to. There's no podcast associated with it, so that should make you wonder.
Is it an alpha?
The podcasting stuff that I have done, spoke to Dr. Ballard. We did that right after we recorded the last set of regular Technoramas. That was real fun. Did well on that.
Wait. Stop right there, because I want to give you major props for being persistent and getting this interview. Because without that, I mean, we probably wouldn't have done it. And it took him 2 years to get there, but he did it. And I want to say, I want to give you a hand right now and tell you that that was a good example of being persistent, you know, squeaky wheel, the whole thing, to get something like that. And that's worth applauding. Okay. Now it's just cheesy.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, that was fantastic. And that was good.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'm tearing up.
Yeah.
We also have a bunch of other great interviews coming down the pike. So stick with us. We're going to try and continue our tradition of about a monthly, once a month special.
Depends on what's going on.
I've got another. Yeah. Yeah. School is back in. My daughter Julie is now officially in high school. And during her orientation,
They said, you can always tell the freshmen because they're the ones carrying everything in their backpack.
Now, Now, you know what? My classes were in such a way that to go to my locker and then go back to my classes would have been it wouldn't have worked. So I did carry my books. So what is she saying?
I told her you can always tell the freshmen because they're the ones with the GPS.
The GPS average. Right.
They're the ones with the GPS. Now we got it.
There you go.
And I had a chance to catch up on the IT Crowd, the British comedy show.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
So what'd you think about the first season?
First season was funny. Second season is even better. I do like the set from the first season. I wish they'd kept it a little more true. It now looks like it's more office-y. But
you think so? I mean, they got a crap crammed in every corner.
They had more crap in random place, and I like that brick basement feeling. Now it feels like they've been moved out of the basement, even though they're supposed to still be there. But
no, you know, I don't agree. I think that I've seen houses with stuff like that crammed in, like they've been living there. And you know what? I think it's perfect.
It's fun to look around the set and go, oh, there's a Commodore PET in the back. You know?
Yeah. It's like what we're saying. Jen had behind her was an Atari 2600. I saw a little Jambox stereo looking thing with cassette tapes or CDs all around it. And like they've been stacked there like somebody was listening to something earlier. Their sets are awesome. And well, I'm going to talk about it anyway. Recently, Make Zine had posted a picture. It was a screenshot of one of the recent episodes. And somebody had noticed that there's a copy of Make Zine over Roy's shoulder. And I looked at it and you could see he's the one where he's got the shirt that says, meh. That's what Douglas C. Welch was just talking about. He said, meh, like, whatever. Anyway, it was a good episode.
Rumor has it there's going to be a U.S. version made of that.
Yeah, and I think
that's going to be tricky.
The guy that plays Moss has something to do with it. I don't think he's a regular character, but I think at beginning or something like that. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
I thought, what's his name? The Locker Gnome would make a good Moss.
The guy in the back?
No.
Oh, Chris Perillo.
Chris Perillo might make a good Moss.
I don't know, maybe.
Want to give a shout out to the chat room before we go into the news segment? Welcome to Captain Rootbeer, Deb Drop, Dr. Tech, D with E, NCAF1, Enigma VB, and Enigma VB1. Apparently he's having some IRC problems. We won't go into that. We've got Mad Marv, Mark Shepard, Mike King, Missing Intellect, Nightstar, Tim Elliott, Douglas E. Welch, Work Desk Bozo, and...
Wait. Wait for it. Zadoom. There you go.
Now when you're lining up the tracks, you can use that to line it up, Craig.
Yeah.
Well synchronized. All right. We're going to take a quick break. No, we've got one news segment. One quick news segment, then we'll take the break.
Yeah.
Wanted to point you to the Mare Nostrum. Over in Barcelona, Spain, they've taken an old church, and it still looks like an old church on the outside, and they've retrofitted the inside, taken out all the pews, and put in a bank of supercomputers on a raised floor with the cooling and the... To say that the wire management is immaculate doesn't do it justice. I mean, it's gorgeous.
I think there's a good reason they put this in a church, because I'm sure some people would love to pray towards this thing.
You get the geeks going by.
Dude, I mean, it's from the outside, it looks like a decent-looking church. But from the inside, whoa. I mean, it doesn't look real the way it's set up. The computers are in a glass enclosure. There's a raised floor. I mean, you have to really look at it to see what I'm talking about. But it just looks surreal.
If you want to see it, you can go to, Tekkenstein.com/Mare Nostrum. That's Marenostrum-Europe-NB1-supercomputer. Because it's Europe's number one supercomputer. That should help you remember it. Otherwise, we'll have it in the show notes.
I was making note of... that I guess that's they got Halion fire suppression or something in the back.
Either that or that's the sysadmin's oxygen to stay alive.
Yeah. Everything's back up. Kevin and Wood said, holy water, fire suppression.
That would put it out. What did they do with all the demons that are running in the background? All right, now we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with lots of Hacks and Strange Stories.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Did you know your computer was your best friend? That's right. The hard drive. The software. Even the monitor. You're listening to Chuck and Craig and Technorama. This is Victor Cajal of the Typical Mac User Podcast. Make sure you use your gadgets right. Now back to Craig and Chuck.
Be a part of the Friends in Tech community. Visit the FIT forums at forums.friendsintech.com.
Hacks and Strange Stories! Missing Intellect sent us a link to a hidden flight simulator in Google Earth.
Bless you, my child process. Sorry, go ahead.
Thou shalt not kill, not minus nine.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Ba-dum-tsh. All right.
Apparently, turns out that there's a special key combination, Control-Alt-A or Command-Option-A for a Mac, that allows you to access a hidden flight simulator in Google Earth. You can control the sim via keystrokes, mm-hmm. mouse, or a joystick. And apparently, you can pick between an F-16 or an SR-22. Interesting.
Sweet.
Didn't know that was in there.
I did that, but I couldn't get it to take off. Just wanted to sit there. I was like, well, wow, this is an exciting flight simulator.
You have not purchased the rubber band option.
Oh, duh. It's a Google rubber band, and it probably costs more than I can afford.
The Google band. Rubberband.google.com. Find out more.
Yeah.
And looking at Calvin.edu, the Calvin College News reports that a student and a professor built a budget supercomputer. Apparently for, what was it, about $1,200 U.S.? They put together
He put this together. He put this together last year in 2006, and it cost him about $2,600. Now he estimates the cost to be around $1,200. He's got several off-the-shelf, or actually little mini ATX machines. He's got four of them in there. They're dual two cores, I think they are, all pieced together with a 250 gig hard drive. And he ends up with, about 26 gigaflops.
So far as we can tell, this is the first supercomputer to have this low price performance ratio. The first to cost less than $100 per gigaflop.
I always like that.
Wow. Yeah, 26.25 gigaflops, or 26.25 billion double precision floating point instructions per second.
But I wonder how fast Quake runs.
I wonder if you compare that to like a Cray from 10 years ago, how does that stack up? I don't know my Cray numbers all that well. Mm. Be interesting to find out.
Yeah, I wonder the cost, man. Or you couldn't do this with off-the-shelf stuff before. So
not off-the-shelf, but compared to something that cost billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I was just thinking, you know, to do this in the past, you'd have to have more everything. So, yeah.
Turning over to Instructables.com, we find a gentleman who has taken his Wiimote and been able to control a bar of flames with his Wiimote. Actually, you can do it with just sound, too. He put this in, the higher the pitch.
Actually, I like their I like the original description better. Tube of fire.
Wiimote Rubens tube. Control fire with sound and a Nintendo Wiimote. Now, the flames look like they never shot up more than about 6 inches. I was expecting to see some serious flameage on this thing.
Well, that's not bad.
So I was a little let down when I played the videos.
I haven't seen this yet, but it looks cool from the little pictures I see.
It's all right. Doesn't get my best flaming gadget thing.
Dude, it's on fire. How much cooler can it be? You have fire and a Wiimote, so?
We also have a story from Engadget on how to build your own underwater ROV for $250. Wow, we should have told Dr. Robert Ballard about this. Granted, this here project isn't nearly... Nice grammar. Who writes that in Gadget? This here project isn't nearly as inexpensive as the $100 underwater ROV from years back, but at least this one's propelled by something a bit more advanced than a pull string. Well,
there's your $150 difference.
Hook it up with a motor.
But they basically took some PVC pipe and made two squares, and of course got them raised. So it's like almost like a cube, not quite a cube. But then they've got a blade facing up and one behind it to make it move.
Yep.
So they just got a small camera in there. Sure, it can go pretty deep, I would imagine, because it's not much. Because you could pretty much suck the air out of the pipes, right?
Yeah. Well, you need some kind of buoyancy control. They got a couple of floats to keep it face up.
Well, it's actually got floats strapped to it, so you can strap as many as you need to keep to keep it where you can control it. But it's got motor control, so this is pretty cool. As soon as I pulled it up, I thought this was fantastic.
Very cool stuff. And speaking of cool stuff, you found over at Hombre Lobo. com.
Well, actually, I think this was originally from Magazine or something like that. I linked to it, but this is some more steampunkery, and here is a stormtrooper. It's totally pieced together. It really looks nice, and there's a Boba Fett right below him, and it's pretty cool. It's like
there's
made with gears and washers.
This looks like somebody went to the hardware store and possibly the utensil store as well. There's all kinds of gears and nuts and bolts and silver plating. Very cool looking mechanical people and robots in here.
Yeah, so go check that one out.
Awesome pictures. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back with Remember When. This is a good one we got coming up this time.
Oh yeah,
this is not the set of numbers that you're looking for. 157, 163, 225, 151, 101.
What is that? Today's winning lotto numbers from Bruce Barr? Suddenly we've got Dr. Floyd's Imagination Nation Ranger secret message crossing over with Technorama. Does anybody know what's going on in this show anymore? Because I'm lost and it's our show.
That's the fun part.
This is Peggy from Twister Sisters, and tonight you're listening to Chuck and Craig at Technorama, and I hear this going to blow you away.
Remember when you had to burn wood or some fossil fuel to cook your food? Remember when you had one phone in your house and it was attached to the wall? Remember when computers filled a room the size of your garage? Technorama remembers.
Not really.
No.
And one of the other things we remember is the games of the 1970s and those early electronics things that were big and heavy and bulky and usually only did one thing at a time. But lo and behold,
not the Merlin.
It's a game that you can play. You can play it six different ways.
Some like to play a tic-tac-toe. Others can test their skill.
Some play a tune on Music Machine or try to play Blackjack 13.
Merlin is six electronic games in one. It's really fun for most everyone in the family. Six penlight batteries not included.
With lights and sounds.
Six games in one.
Merlin's a game that's lots of fun.
Merlin, six electronic games in one. From Parker Brothers.
Man. You know
what? There was another one too, but I didn't.
I don't know. Oh, you got another one?
No, go ahead.
Oh, this thing right here, I don't know what made me click the other morning, but I was like, the Merlin, man, I miss that thing. And I went looking around. They're all over eBay. And I read the Wikipedia article, which was interesting because there was a couple things I didn't understand or know about it, rather. But, yeah, it had the six games, Tic-Tac-Toe, yep. Music Machine, Echo, which was like the sign where you do the, you follow along the tune,
yep.
Blackjack 13, Magic Square, and Mindbender. And I stayed on this thing forever. I mean, it's big and red.
You had one?
Yes, I had one. It was...
Elisa was laughing when she saw this. I said, hey, if you were a child of the 70s, this was high tech. Yeah. You would have wanted one. You would have been bugging me for one. I know you.
For those of you who don't know what it is, it looks like a red telephone receiver. But in the middle, it had...
It looks like a big old red telephone, kind of an old early cell phone in a way.
Yeah. And, you know, I've thought about that when I had it. You know, it looked like a phone. But it had, in the middle, it has nine little touch buttons with... And then two on either side, on the top and the bottom. So it had, like, 11 buttons. And you would play the games. It's nothing fancy about it. But it was actually designed by a NASA engineer, Bob Doyle. He was a Harvard PhD. He worked with NASA. He designed this, and they were talking about the design process and all that good stuff on Wikipedia.
There's probably one of these still running the shuttle.
Yeah, it's probably sitting on there. But yeah, I lived on this thing, just like, you know, you see kids with Game Boys and stuff. But this was it for me. Well, all those Mattel games are, you know, where you just had the little lines, like the football and the baseball and all that stuff. Those things were fantastic.
Yep.
But anyway, what I thought was, excuse me, interesting about this was that searching around, I found a white one. I was like, a white one? What is this? And it said Dr. Smith across the top. Well, it turns out when they rolled this out in Japan in the late 70s, Lost in Space was very popular. And Merlin didn't translate well into Japan, or Japanese, rather. So they changed the name to Dr. Smith.
Really?
Yeah. So I found that information at the handheldmuseum.com. And they have more information about every handheld that you've ever seen, thought of, or heard of. I'm not kidding. It is over there at the Handheld Museum, or www.handheldmuseum. Hello, Craig. Open mouth. Speak words. Handheldmuseum.com. And that was kind of a fun. But, man, I'm going to buy one of these off eBay because I loved it so much.
Offer some to Tanya from Dancing with Elephants. She told me earlier that she still has hers with the instruction manual.
Man, I'm trying, you know, I was sitting there going, whatever happened to mine?
Answer me this, Batman.
What's that?
What do they mean by pen light batteries? Are those AAAs or AAs?
I think those are just AAs. It had like six AAs in it.
Took six of them.
Yeah, it was huge. But yeah, I've taken it apart, cleaned it. I mean, man, I did all kinds of stuff with that thing. But yeah, when you play that commercial, I heard the tones and I was like, oh, that was what I was. Oh, I miss it.
He's having flashbacks.
Yeah, if you look down here at the bottom of the Wikipedia article, there's a Merlin Java emulation, which I played that, and it was kind of cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And then hot on the heels of those was like the Mattel football and Coleco football, the handheld games.
Yeah.
Those were the predecessors to the...
and actually, they re-released
the Nintendo
those.
DS
they re-released those, so you can get those around. But yeah, those were fun, too. And I remember seeing baseball and football, and, you know, those were fantastic.
All right, should we check out what's in the media corner?
Let's peek behind the corner and look. Yeah, let's go.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
All right, we're going to start out this first one with Not Safe for Children. This is apparently a Japanese translation of Star Wars... Revenge of the Sith. Translated from Japanese, however, it goes back to English as Backstroke of the West. And there are numerous screen captures with the captions on them. Now, what's funny is, you know, they always start out with the you know, the rolling thing. It says, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That's in English on the screen, but yet the subtitle had to appear and says, long time ago in the faraway galaxy, and it only goes down from there.
You know,
then the screen comes up, says, Star Wars, and the subtitle says, Star War. They haven't even got the title of the movie right.
I think...
Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
I remember...
The Backstroke of the West.
You know, I remember one, it was episode 3 or something like that. They did a translation and it didn't work well, just like we're talking about here. And one of the lines was... So, it was... Palpatine was talking to Anakin. He says, so, I foresee you becoming more powerful than Yoda. And I foresee that you will one day be invisible. Instead of invincible. I think we even talked about that one time on the show when it came out. You'll be invincible.
This is
invisible.
This is terrible. This is just, you know, you can sort of discern the meaning of the dialogue, what's in here, you know, during the major fight scene at the end. You know, Anakin says something like, I'm going to kill you, but it comes out as, your dead period arrived, teacher. And then
Obi-Wan, let them
Obi-Wan
pass
is standing
us.
On the higher ground. Yeah. And says, the geography that I stands compares you superior. What I love is you. And when Darth Vader stands up and goes, no,
yeah.
It's subtitled as do not want.
That's right.
This whole thing is just wrong.
Do not want. Was Lucas involved in these translations? Because it just chopped up.
Apparently, we are a long, long way from ever having a universal translator if we can't even get the manual translation from Japanese correct.
Do not want.
Second thing we got is a Christmas wish list item from Michael R. Menengay over at the Dragon Page. It's an R2-D2 projector. Yes, it's a life-size replica of R2-D2 robot, or at least I believe it's life-size. And it's, instead of out from his little, you know, light-projecting thing in the top of his dome, comes, it's a projector.
You know what?
Like, you'd show TVs and stuff on it.
Yeah, do not want.
It's...
Actually, you know why? It's, you know why this will never work? This will never work. You know why?
Why is that?
Because the kids, whenever they come in, they'll be playing with him, and he'll all be projecting over the kitchen table instead of the wall.
It's also 2,000 pounds sterling, so that's like close to $4,000 U.S. for this thing.
Yeah, I mean...
But it looks cool.
You know what I'm saying? There's no way. Everybody be playing with it. He'll be shooting the projector out the window and, you know, not on the wall. Never work.
I thought it would be funny if all he played was this little thing of... Princess Leia
looking
going,
back and forth and putting
Obi-Wan,
the car in.
You're my only hope.
Yeah.
No, she just keeps repeating the same loop over and over. Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. And can't we get any other channels?
I can see your wife looking at you. Yeah, and this was worth 2,000 pounds sterling?
Yeah, it's a cool geek toy.
I see the same crap on every channel.
Finally, in the media corner, we have
a
mention of the IT crowd.
Yeah, which we spoke about a little earlier, and there's the screenshot of... of Roy with this funny look on his face.
Well, that's when he's being told that he's about to get eaten.
No. Or,
oh, Jen, if a couple of grown men can't make a pervert happy, we might as well move to Iran.
Don't get me started on that show. But anyway, you can see the screenshot and see they have Maxine on the show. On the table, rather.
How on earth did they spot that?
Somebody was...
I guess they're like us. They're always looking at things in the background. I was distracted by the toys on over his left shoulder.
I know. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Or the microscope.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things in the set to look at. So, yeah, there's like little trinkets behind him. There's some microscope for whatever reason.
Good stuff. Yeah, all right, anyway. We're going to take one more quick break, then we'll be back with the Geek Library.
No.
Did I say it right?
No.
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 Oh, we'll be back with your rant.
We'll be back with a review from me.
There, yes. That's good, because it has to do with this next thing we're going to play.
Larry, what in the world are you hacking now?
Dude, I just hacked a wirt to change diapers, feed the cats, clean the litter box, and defend my wireless network.
Looks like you got some work to do.
That's weird. But now it makes toast.
Hi, this is Paul.
This is Larry.
The authors of Linksys Ultimate WRT54G Hacking.
We included many fun hacking projects in our book and want you to come learn about them in a hands-on environment in the new SANS course, Security 535, Embedded Device Hacking.
You'll learn how to take a $60 device and customize it to detect rogue access points, make VPN connections, and build mesh networks.
And maybe even make toast.
So visit paul.com.com/SANS to sign up today.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from Evil Genius Chronicles, and you are listening to Technorama, because you're in the cool club.
All right, that was kind of opportunistic that we put that promo in there just as you were about to
talk about the ultimate WRT-54G hacking book from Paul and Larry, our fellow friends in tech. And they were able to get a reviewer copy. And I want to tell you, first off, I do have a WRT-54G, actually the Linux version. And you do too, right? You?
Sure. What'd you find in the book?
You've got a unit as well, right, Chuck?
Well, define unit. I have a Linksys WRT, whatever that thing is you said. Yeah.
54G. Yeah.
Go ahead, anyway, Moss.
Well, yeah. Don't you, Chuck? Anyway, the book is really well written as far as if you've got one of these units or you're interested in doing any hacking on it whatsoever. The unit is a wireless access point from Linksys. And it's very flexible because, one, it has Linux on it to begin with. There are several different variants out there, forks of the firmware on it that do, and they all do different things. People are hacking it up. It's open source. You can make it do everything from be a personal asterisk phone system for yourself, all the way to ensuring you have some secure access from the outside world, you know, doing like some VPN or SSH tunneling. Well, anyway, in this book, they cover about every gambit of what this thing can do and all the different firmwares. They lay them out, what they do. They even have a list of hacks you can do with it, including adding an SD card slot, which I thought was a fascinating, interesting idea, because add a little storage to it. You can put files on there or other programs, give it some more room to install stuff, all that stuff. So I would highly recommend this book. Just flipping through it, I'm just like, wow, I picked up some really cool tips. Adding larger antennas, they break down what you're looking for to do this, that, and the other. It's very nice. I do have two criticisms, and I know I hate to even bring these up. The solder job in one of the pictures looked like they've been soldered 1,000 times, and it looks like a clump of crap.
Oops.
But in all fairness, they did say they've been soldering and desoldering this a lot because of the book. And the other thing, I thought one of the hardware hacks was a little bit of a stretch for me, and that was Velcroing the unit to the back of your laptop screen so you can carry it around.
What? Okay.
Other than that, I just thought that was a little stretch for a hardware hack. You know, I can duct tape anything to the back of my computer. But those are nitpicky considering the amount of information that's in these books, and it's really good. So if you have one of these units, you're not using one anymore, or, you know, it's only like $60-$70, you can get one of these and you can make it do all kinds of stuff. Mine, for example, if I'm on a wireless hotspot out in the world, I can SSH back into it and securely get out of the wireless network, you know, to my home. At least I know where the data is going. So I don't, you know, nobody can really sniff me out very easily. I can surf web pages without people seeing what I'm doing at Starbucks, you know. So any rate, highly recommend the book. It's The Ultimate WRT-54G Hacking.
Worth the money?
It's definitely worth the money.
Okay. You didn't wreck your thing by, you know, soldering the wrong thing to the wrong thing?
No, I haven't soldered anything to it, but there was a couple of software hacks that I thought were interesting. I'm going to take a look at.
Okay. We're going to try something new. We're going to do a little geek humor.
Well, that would be new, wouldn't it?
And then we'll finish up with the geek library.
Welcome to Geek Humor! A physicist, a biologist, and a mathematician are sitting in a cafe and notice people going into and coming out of the house across the street. First, they see two people go into the house. Time passes. After a while, they notice three persons coming out of the house. The physicist says,
"The measurements are not accurate."
The biologist says,
"They have reproduced."
The mathematician says,
"If one person enters the house, then it will be empty again."
And there you have it. Geek humor!
Hmm. You do get that, right, Greg?
Yeah, I think.
I don't know. Okay, I don't have to explain it to you.
No.
Great.
Come on, man.
Because I think the thing that does need explaining is our next topic, the Star Trek inspirational posters.
Yeah. Now, you know what? I went looking for these. I went looking for these because we talked about this on the show, about everything I learned from Star Trek, or everything I learned about life I learned from Star Trek.
Yeah.
That is a poster. I've seen that poster with those words on it, but I went looking for it. Yeah, I went looking for it so I could show you a link. I can't find it, but I did find these Star Trek inspirational posters. You've seen the posters with the nice pictures on it.
These,
and it says something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this one, yeah. I'm like, I love this first one. It has Captain Kirk. He's kind of sitting on the bridge, and he's laughing, and he says, "Captain James T. Kirk," subtitled, "I'm sorry I can't hear you over the sound of how awesome I am."
One of my favorites is, it's the caption is, "Expendability," and it's got a picture of...
Sure got.
It says, "Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Ensign Ricky are beaming down to a planet. Guess who's not coming back?" He's the only one wearing a red shirt.
Yeah, there's some other good ones in here. You can download these, by the way. They're larger sizes for wallpapers and stuff, I guess. I like the Vulcans. So brilliant, so logical, so pointy.
We won't go over all of them. I'll leave you with the Oracle. Oracle's message of the day, number one. Potatoes make you stupid. Stupid enough to believe the Oracle. Eat more potatoes. And she's hot.
She didn't eat the potatoes.
Doesn't say that last part. Eat more potatoes. You must go see these. They're available at echosphere.net/StarTrekInsp with underscores between
just
the
go to the show notes.
Do we have show notes, or is the thing still down?
Yes. Did you not look at the last show? I posted them all in the show notes on the weblog.
So how'd you get rid of the wiki spam?
The wiki is coming back. I have not put it back up yet.
Oh, but okay.
If you want show notes, they're in the post with the show.
Really? Doesn't that make the post like ultra huge long?
There's a little thing called more you put in there, and so you have to click and look at the full posting. You know, on the front page, they're abbreviated. You click on more, and there's all the stuff.
I'm not used to somebody saying more without suffixing it with on.
Okay, move.
All right, last thing we have for this.
This was...
I believe you put this in.
Yes, this little video is very impressive. It's 35 years of progress in building Tokyo in 10 seconds. Some poor sap had been sitting there taking pictures for 35 years as buildings, you know, were risen in Tokyo, and it's all condensed down to a 10-minute video, and it is fascinating. Watch
you
that.
Sure this isn't like a little model?
No, that's not what I'm... No, okay. These are photographs of the city, and you can see, when you play it, you see it growing. You know, all the buildings come up and
35 years.
It says right there, witness the progress of Tokyo's Senkenju Ward from... whatever that is, from 1969 to 2004
in a miniature cereal box form. I feel for the guy who had to hold still with a camera for 35 years. He must have had an iron bladder.
Well, I feel like an idiot.
Yeah, because the first picture I see looks like Godzilla could come through there and stomp on it.
So this is fake.
You keep looking for those news articles, Sparky.
Okay. Anyway, it was cool. It was cool, okay? I tell you, it's cool.
All right, finally, after the week of mail melee, we have our Naked Archaeologist contest winners, and we'd like to give a big congratulations to Mark Junk, Crash, Ken Pace, Nick St. Gabriel, and Avner Braverman. Thank you all very much. All the contest entrants were very much appreciated. We will be contacting you shortly, so you know, verify shipping addresses and whatnot, and then get you your backpack, shirt, and hat. That'll be terrific. Thank you all, and a big thank you to the people over at History International for sending us the prize packs. And don't forget, we have the San Francisco meetup on September 25th. You suggest a restaurant where we can, or other gathering place where we can get together, and we'll find something close to where we're staying.
We'll even let you pick us up from where we're staying.
That would be awful nice. Yeah. We appreciate your support on that and many other things. If you have any comments regarding this show, call the listener line 206-222-2428, or you can email us, as we've said numerous times already, technorama@chuckchat.com. The website is www.chuckchat.com for all the swag and forums and webcam and all that good stuff. And there's also, which we really appreciate, we still have a number of regular monthly donators who donate through the monthly micropayment, or you can give a one-time. There's buttons on the website there if you want to donate to the tip jar. You can also write a review in the iTunes Music Store, Podcast Pickle, Podcast Alley, or one of the many other podcast directories. That helps gets us a little more notoriety and more listeners, more feedback, more show topics, and things just get better and better and better.
Notoriety? Wow, you're shooting high there, buddy.
Thank you to the following people for donating their time and talent to keeping Technorama going. We got Madmar, who provides all the great blog content during the week. Thank you very much. Scott Reynolds and Ustream, who keep our modest live streams going on Sunday nights as we crank through the show. We also have the...
Hey.
Yes?
I do want to mention something that we forgot to talk about.
What's that?
The Parsec Awards.
The Parsec Awards. We did not win either of the two categories, but we do appreciate being nominated in two of them and getting to the finalist stage. That was very much an honor.
But I will say congratulations to the command line of the Command Line podcast.
Yep.
He actually won. And
Leanne Mabry, who won in the reality category.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Grant
Pachoco, yep.
Dr. Floyd, they won some. I don't have all the rest of them in there. But you know what? I watched the video of the Parsec Awards, and it was cool because when they got up and they said, you know, best tech podcast, and they were naming off mm-hmm. all the podcasts, and they said Technorama, and I heard people hooting and hollering. I was like, wow, somebody likes us.
That was kind of a neat feeling. Never had that before.
Yeah, that was cool. So, yeah, it was pretty neat.
So, thank you very much. We look forward to participating again next year. This show... Yes.
No, I'm going to forsake it now because we didn't win. I'm just kidding. I do appreciate the nomination. It was a lot of fun.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also associated with the great lineup of audio content over at farpointmedia.net. If you're getting this show the old-fashioned way by clicking on the link on the website, consider subscribing to get the show automatically delivered to you for free. Drop either one of us an email or both of us at the same time, technorama@chunkchat.com. It's a great way to go. And we will be happy to give you more information. Any other parting comments in the next 10 seconds?
Word?
Microsoft Word?
No.
Word to your mother. Tell a friend about Technorama, and until next time, give me a big binary high five.
A big one?
101.
Even bigger, we haven't been here in a week.
101!
Is that better for?
Till next time.
Let's make like a tree and get out of here.
When we woke up, we had these bodies.
Say it in Russian.
Then we woke up, we had these waddies.
Now say nuclear vessels.
No.